America. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Wednesday, October 25th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The White House says Israel-Hamas ceasefire talks are premature.
This is war. It is combat. It is bloody. It is ugly. And it's going to be messy. And innocent civilians are going to be hurt going forward. I wish I could tell you something different. I wish that that wasn't going to happen.
Secretary of State Blinken says Israel has the right to defend itself. The UN Secretary General calls for a ceasefire and respect for international law in the Israel-Hamas conflict. Africa is deeply divided over the ongoing war in the Middle East. An attack by ADF rebels leaves many dead in eastern Congo. Liberia announces election results and sets dates for a runoff election. ECOWAS sponsors a voluntary return program for West Africa migrants stranded in Niger.
This intervention was a humanitarian intervention because they are stranded, they are in transit camp, they are overcrowded, they want to return back to their home countries.
And millions of children are still affected by polio despite global efforts to eradicate the virus. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The White House says it is premature to call for a ceasefire in a war between Israel and Hamas. We get the details from VOA's chief national correspondent Steve Herman in Washington.
National Security Council spokesman John Kirby told reporters on Tuesday a ceasefire at this time would only benefit Hamas, which kidnapped and killed Israeli civilians on October 7th. The bloodshed has left more than 1,400 people dead in Israel and reports of thousands of Palestinians killed in Gaza. The NSC spokesman did not rule out consideration of a humanitarian pause to allow more aid for the hundreds of thousands of internally displaced to enter Gaza. Ahead of an expected ground assault into Gaza by Israeli forces, Kirby reiterated a stark prediction of further civilian casualties.
This is war. It is combat. It is bloody. It is ugly. And it's going to be messy. And innocent civilians are going to be hurt going forward. I wish I could tell you something different. I wish that that wasn't going to happen.
There are concerns worldwide about the hostilities widening. U.S. officials on Tuesday confirmed there have been about a dozen attacks on American forces in Iraq and Syria during the past week. Steve Herman, VOA News, Washington.
U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken has reaffirmed Israel's right or any nation to defend itself against attacks such as the October 7 Hamas assault on Israel. Blinken spoke Tuesday before the U.N. Security Council.
I'm here today because the United States believes that the United Nations, and this council in particular, has a crucial role to play in addressing this crisis. Indeed, we put forward a resolution that sets out practical steps that we can take together toward that end. The resolution builds on many elements of the text that Brazil put forward last week. It incorporates substantive feedback that we received from fellow council members over recent days. It also draws heavily on the views that I heard firsthand from partners across the region after Hamas's appalling attack on October 7, views that the United States shares. First, we all recognize the right and indeed the imperative of states to defend themselves against terrorism. That's why we must unequivocally condemn Hamas's barbaric terrorist attack against Israel. Babies riddled with bullets, young people hunted down and gunned down with glee, young people beheaded, families burned alive in a final embrace, parents executed in front of their children, children executed in front of their parents, and so many taken hostage in Gaza. We have to ask, indeed it must be asked, where is the outrage? Where is the revulsion? Where is the rejection? Where is the explicit condemnation of these horrors? We must affirm the right of any nation to defend itself and to prevent such horror from repeating itself. No member of this council, no nation in this entire body could or would tolerate the slaughter of its people.
U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken speaking Tuesday before the U.N. Security Council. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres has again called for a ceasefire and respect for international law in the conflict between Israel and the Palestinian armed group Hamas. Speaking Tuesday before the UN Security Council, Guterres pleaded for civilians to be protected.
The situation in the Middle East is growing more dire by the hour. The war in Gaza is raging and risks spiraling throughout the region. Divisions are splintering societies. Tensions threaten to boil over. At a crucial moment like this, it is vital to be clear on principles, starting with the fundamental principle of respecting and protecting civilians. I have condemned unequivocally the horrifying and unprecedented 7 October acts of terror by Hamas in Israel. Nothing can justify the deliberate killing, injuring, and kidnapping of civilians or the launching of rockets against civilian targets. All hostages must be treated humanely and released immediately and without conditions. Excellencies, it is important to also recognize the attacks by Hamas did not happen in a vacuum. The Palestinian people have been subjected to 56 years of suffocating occupation. They have seen their land steadily devoured by settlements and plagued by violence, their economy stifled, their people displaced, and their homes demolished. Their hopes for a political solution to their plight have been vanishing. But the grievances of the Palestinian people cannot justify the appalling attacks by Hamas, and those appalling attacks cannot justify the collective punishment of the Palestinian people. Excellencies, even war as rules. We must demand that all parties uphold and respect their obligations under international humanitarian law, take constant care in the conduct of military operations to spare civilians, and respect and protect hospitals, and respect the inviolability of UN facilities, which today are sheltering more than 600,000 Palestinians. The relentless bombardment of Gaza by Israeli forces, the level of civilian casualties, and the wholesale destruction of neighborhoods continue to mount and are deeply alarming.
UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres speaking Tuesday before the UN Security Council. The ongoing Israel-Hamas conflict in the Gaza Strip has left Africa deeply divided, with some countries choosing to remain silent while others have openly shown solidarity with either Israel or Palestine. Adi Ismail Samata is a professor at the University of Minnesota and a senator in the Somali Parliament. He tells VOA's Douglas Mpunga that it is no surprise that African countries look at the conflict differently.
There are two ways to gauge the impact that the war in Palestine-Israel is happening on Africa. One is just a moral question of Israeli citizens who have committed no crime individually, who have been killed by Hamas, and then the Palestinian population who have been victims of Israeli apartheid system. So as human beings, Africans will feel the pain of both of these. The second one is that Africa has a choice to make. And it seems to be that the continent is divided on this, although the majority argue for liberation of Palestine, such that there are two states, an Israeli state and a sort of a Palestinian state, that live peacefully side by side. The majority of Africans sort of support that. But there are a few regimes in the continent, certainly in West Africa, among the places, who seem to be blind to the injustice that the Palestinian people have suffered for almost 70 years and more. So these are the two ways we can think about this.
Indeed, the opinion is divided in Africa. But the analysts also have said this might impact some militant groups in Africa. For instance, Al-Shabaab killed people in a bombing over the weekend. And another rebel Islamic militant group, ADF, killed people in Uganda, tourists in Uganda, and crossed DR Congo and killed more. How this will impact those militant groups?
I don't think it will have an impact. These were killers in the first place, regardless of what's happening in sort of in Palestine, Israel. And so my sense is that they will continue to do their dirty work where they are able to get away with. But I just don't believe that the crisis in Palestine, Israel, will have any influence on these people one way or the other. So my sense is that they have their own particularistic agenda, and their agenda is terroristic, and that's what they are going to continue to do.
There are conflicts on the continent, some have said, are being forgotten as the Israeli-Hamas war is in the limelight. What's your comment on that?
My response to that as an African is that Africans have to wake up, that we are adults, we are not children. We are not under the colony anymore. And consequently, others are going to meddle into our affairs if we allow them to do so. And so the fundamental question here is, will African leaders, being a member of the Pan-African Parliament myself, I have seen this inside out. If the leadership in our continent or in our particular countries doesn't have the moral fortitude to see that the children of tomorrow's generations are going to be competitive in this world, economically, skill-wise, in terms of trade, in terms of intelligence, in terms of sports, and so on and so forth, and do what it takes to make the preparations for these people and be accountable to them, then it doesn't matter what's happening elsewhere. The Europeans, the Americans, the East Asians will all ignore us and take us for a ride when the opportunity arises.
Adi Ismail Samatar is a professor at the University of Minnesota and a senator in the Somali Parliament. He spoke with my colleague Douglas Mpunga from Minneapolis, USA. Listening to Daybreak Africa on The Voice of America. I'm James Barton in Washington. Today's Wednesday, October 25th. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Liberia has ended the first round of its presidential and legislative elections with the announcement of a runoff in November. Denise Nipsen has more from Monrovia.
The runoff election is hereby declared.
The National Elections Commission, NEC, of Liberia on Tuesday released the final results of the October 10 presidential poll. NEC chairperson Devieto Brown-Lasana says incumbent President George Weah of the Coalition for Democratic Change, CDC, has more votes in the first round than his main competitor Joseph Boakai of the Unity Party.
The results of the 10th October 2023 polls showed that the ticket of the Congress for Democratic Change, CDC, obtained the highest number of votes, 804,087, constituting 43.83%, followed by the ticket of Unity Party, which obtained 796,961 votes, constituting 43.44%.
Brian Lasana said the country who go to a runoff vote since none of the candidates were able to obtain the required 50 plus one.
With the results of the 10th October polls showing that no presidential ticket obtained 50% plus one vote, a runoff election is hereby declared to be held on Tuesday, 14 November 2023, between the two tickets that obtained the highest number of votes, the presidential ticket of the Coalition of Democratic Change, CDC, led by Mr. George Manuel Weah, and the presidential ticket of Unity Party, UP, led by Mr. Joseph Nyuma Boyka.
Meanwhile, the NEC has officially declared the opening of the campaign from now till November 12, 2023 at 11:59 p.m. Moreover, November 14, 2023 has been scheduled as the official date for voting. This is the second time that Weah and Boakai will compete in a runoff election. They met before in the 2017 polls and Weah was victorious. It is expected that regional and tribal alignment will play heavily as usual during the runoff campaign. Both Weah and Boakai are having talks with losing candidates in the first round to gain their support. They have both met with the standard bearers of the collaborating political parties, Alexander Cummings and Edward Appleton of the Grassroots Development Movement. For VOA's Daybreak Africa, I'm Denise Nipsen in Monrovia, Liberia.
The Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS, has partnered with the International Organization for Migration, the IOM, to create a voluntary return program for West African migrants stranded in Niger en route to Europe. ECOWAS has allocated $200,000 for the IOM to airlift 212 migrants from Niger to Nigeria. Sintiki Uba is the Director for Humanitarian and Social Affairs of the ECOWAS Commission. She tells me that the policy underscores the regional body's commitment to secure the humane repatriation of its citizens.
In 2022, we were alerted about the influx of stranded migrants that have been returned from Algeria into the Niger Republic. And as ECOWAS, those stranded migrants, we realized that most of them were ECOWAS citizens. Particularly, the highest number we had was from Guinea-Conakry, Mali, and Nigeria. So we went for a fact-finding mission to the transit camp where they were. We met with the migrants. We saw the difficult conditions that they were living in the transit center where they were being hosted. It was overcrowded, and it became very, very important that we do something about it immediately. Most of these migrants have been staying there for a protracted period of time. So this is the context that created the window for us as the ECOWAS Commission to intervene with our partner, the International Office for Migration, to address the problems that were being encountered both by the stranded migrants and the host nation, Niger.
What is the role of the International Organization for Migration in this project?
The International Organization for Migration is the lead in terms of all issues dealing with migration, but particularly in this case for voluntary return and safe return of migrants. This is part of their mandate. The transit camps that we visited in the Republic of Niger was being managed by their office.
I see you have allocated at least about $200,000 to empower the IOM. How would it alleviate the root causes of the migration from ECOWAS countries? Because my understanding is that these people who migrate from West Africa to Europe are doing so for economic reasons.
This intervention was a humanitarian intervention because they are stranded. They are in transit camp. They are overcrowded. They want to return back to their home countries. It was not safe to keep them in the transit camp because there's a maximum amount of people you can keep in the transit camp. We were worried that some of them were really young, unaccompanied children. And also, they included women. And we were worried that to have this type of number of people in the camp, we need to ensure their protection. So our intervention was primarily a humanitarian intervention.
Dr. Sintiki Ube, thank you very much.
Thank you. All the best.
Sintiki Ube is the Director for Humanitarian and Social Affairs of ECOWAS Commission. She was speaking with us from the Nigerian capital, Abuja. At least 26 people have been killed and a dozen wounded in an attack attributed to the rebels of the Allied Democratic Forces, the ADF, a militia affiliated to the Islamic State group. This new attack has provoked anger and concern among the population. Zanib Neti Zayede has details.
It was around 9 p.m. Monday when the first shots were heard in Masusi district. The bullet of the assailant Kwako at the end of the operation, unnoticed by the security services. On Tuesday, 26 bodies of civilians were recovered from the scene of the tragedy, along with around 16 wounded, according to Kasereka Mahamba, president of Oicha Civil Society. He says, according to the information they received when the ADF forces arrived at the scene of the tragedy, they started operating with steely determination and without much noise. Then they began killing people. Towards the end, they fired bullets in such a way that people thought they were bandits. So far, 26 people have been killed and their bodies are in the mortuary. Early in the morning, local people collected the bodies of the victims from the scene of the incident and began to take the dead with them along the main road. But security forces took the bodies and placed them in a vehicle bound for the morgue of Oicha General Referral Hospital, the largest health facility in the area. This situation has displaced many in Masusi district where the incident took place. In some houses, all family members were killed. Kakule Sivyahera's son and two sisters-in-law were among the dead. He says it's better to leave the area for the time being. He says he is leaving because the situation is getting complicated. His family is dead, and so he has decided to leave. In response, the DRC's armed forces say that the assailants are seeking to avenge those killed by the army during bombardment in Tingwe 24 hours ago. But he reassures them that the National Army, the FRDC, is going after the assailant and clashes are underway some 5 kilometers away. For VOA Africa, I'm Zane Mneti Zaidi in Goma.
Millions of children remain unvaccinated with polio vaccine due to pandemics, conflict, climate disasters, displacement, and growing misinformation about vaccines. This is according to the UN Children's Agency, UNICEF, which says polio continues to cripple children in Afghanistan, Pakistan, and more than 20 countries in Africa and Asia. Maureen Odhiambo reports.
The United Nations Children Fund, UNICEF, in collaboration with governments and partners, vaccinates more than 400 million children against polio each year. The agency says investing in the elimination of polio might spare health budgets an estimated $33.1 billion in this century as compared to the cost of controlling the virus and continuing to respond to outbreaks. Aidan O'Leary is the director of the World Health Organization's Global Polio Eradication Initiative.
We need to have an absolute unrelenting focus on what we consider to be the most consequential geographies. These are 7 subnational areas around the world where the bulk of new cases are now occurring. Each of these areas are affected by a combination of inaccessibility, insecurity, and a range of protracted and complex humanitarian emergencies.
The WHO says 21 countries in Africa are still experiencing polio outbreaks at the moment, and in areas that have not experienced any circulation in decades. Wery Munjage is the nominee for governor of Rotary Club District 9212, covering the East African region. He told NTV Kenya they have managed to reach millions of children in the region and across the globe in the fight against the virus.
And over the past 35 years, we've mobilized efforts around the world to do so. And to date, we've mobilized over $2 billion in eradicating polio. We vaccinated almost 3 billion children.
According to WHO, many of these children live in poorest, most marginalized neighborhoods where they have little or no access to life-saving medical cares and immunizations. Lillian Mutua is the head of health promotion in Nairobi County in Kenya. She says despite the poliovirus being highly prevalent in children below the age of 5, unvaccinated adults are at risk as well.
The problem with polio is that it's a disease that is only vaccine preventable. It has no treatment, it has no cure. So in case one has not been immunized or has compromised immunity and they get the polio disease, it cannot be reversed.
According to the WHO, 1 in 200 infections leads to irreversible paralysis, and among these paralyzed, 5 to 10% die when their breathing muscles become immobilized of their emergency. Reporting for Viewers Daybreak Africa, I am Moreno Jumbo in Sacramento, California.
And that's it for this Wednesday, October 25th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for coming aboard with us this morning. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I am James Barton in Washington, wishing that you will have a lovely day.